to Muffin Talk. Welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. Today, I've invited Dr. Peter Lynam to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Peter, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Hi to my.
Dr. Peter Lynam is Professor Emeritus of History at Massey University in Auckland. He is a specialist in the religious history of New Zealand and noted for many articles, books, guest lectures, and his media presence. In 2019, he was made a member of the Order of New Zealand for services to religious history and the community. Peter, how did you first get involved and interested in religious history?
Well, I think simply at my university courses at the University of Canterbury, I greatly enjoyed the little glimpses of religion that appeared on a secular history program. It was interesting because when I was at high school, I was actually sent to a course, to a career guidance course, to indicate which direction people should go. And they picked up that I was very interested in religion due to my family background, and they suggested I should study religious studies. But at that point, it seemed completely pointless. I imagined I was going to end up as a school teacher, and I didn't think there was going to be much place for that in the school curriculum. The other thing I had a possibility of was being an architect, until I discovered the physics was not my favourite subject. So that was how it began at university. And I really got into it very quickly, Beata, because I had written a history in draft of the Christian Union of our university in my third year. And then in my honours year, I did a paper on the Reformation. And then while I was waiting to hear whether I was going to get a scholarship overseas, which I did get, I used the time to write a history of my then denomination, the Open Brethren. And that book was produced while I was way overseas. Although I went overseas to study English religious history, and especially the history of small religious groups, I had already published a book even before I'd finished.
So when you say English history, English religious history, is that anything that is religion in England?
Well, it was a specific topic. So I was very interested in the 18th century in England at that time. And my supervisor at the University of Sussex directed me to a group I'd never heard of before called the New Jerusalem Church, or the Swedenborgians, as they were called in commonly. And so I spent 3 years investigating this really unusual little group, mostly made famous because the great poet William Blake was briefly a member of this church.
Ah, is that the reason why why you were asked to do something about it?
Well, there was a good deal of public interest, yes, in the topic, yes.
So that's interesting. And I have to admit, I don't know much about the Brethren, but yes, when you come from a background with a very specific religion, then maybe also if you're not the majority religion, you're more interested in what do others believe. Is that possible? Is that a reason?
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, I think having an insight into one small religious minority, you can understand the ideas and values of other small religious minorities, and you learn to treat them very seriously. Whereas quite commonly, you know, the major religions often pay little attention to the small churches and small religious groups that actually, when you dig around into a community, you find an amazing range of different groups that are present. And what I've always tried to do is to treat them with the utmost respect, even though I may not share their values at all, and they understand that. But I think what they appreciate is I want to listen intently to what it means for them. And that's the approach I've always taken.
And that's the approach also for interfaith and interreligious dialogue that I've
experienced. It absolutely
if
has
you don't
to
have
be.
That attitude, I think that you're not getting very far.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And we are now in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So you returned back from England. And concerning history, religious history, Aotearoa, New Zealand is, from a cultural and religious point of view, a relatively young country. So yes. Apparently the Maori settlement started in the 13th century. That's more than 1,000 years after Christianity was introduced to Europe. And can you give us a little bit of an overview of religious history here in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
Yes, so there are, in effect, I think, three critical phases to that religion after the advent of Christianity and Europeans in New Zealand. I mean, we have to accept that the period before, it's very difficult for historians to study because of the lack of written records. And so we're very dependent upon marvelous work that Maori scholars and anthropologists have done about the traditions of the gods and so-called departmental gods, because they're gods of the forest and of the storms and of the winds, etc. Then we move into a very distinct period of missionary work to Maori and of Maori significant response after a period. There's a period where there's very little response for about 20 years. And then about 1831, 32, there's a sudden movement of groups of Maori in the northern part, in Northland, towards Christianity. And then there are, by the end of the, by 1840, there are three principal Christian churches operating among Maori. There's the Anglican Church's Church Missionary Society, the Wesleyan Methodist Missionary Society, and the Marist Mission of the Catholic Church. So really we need to put that period of early missionary work into a wider context in which we watch the way in which Maori develop their own distinctive ways that they understand Christianity, and that a number of diverse groups emerge. And I really think the story of the Maori response to Christianity is by no means complete at the moment, but it has a very significant moment with the development of Ratana in the early 20th century. And so there's a great period of movement. And because actually, for a lot of the time, Pākehā essentially ignored Maori, the other aspect of Maori, of New Zealand's Aotearoa's religious history, is the story of Pākehā trying to work out in what ways will they develop their own religious traditions that they have brought with them, deeply embedded in their identity, but now they're alienated from them, and they have to reproduce this. And it's quite interesting how in the early stages of their arrival, a great deal of attention is given to reproducing it, but they don't have much money to do it with. Mm-hmm. So we can watch, well, all over New Zealand, you see these little wooden churches that must have filled very small communities, been massive community enterprises. And so that's a significant phase of the European story. And then in the 20th century, it's clear that from around the time of World War II, there's a significant move where churches begin to feel really part of Aotearoa New Zealand, no longer just immigrant movements from home, dependent upon priests and nuns and ministers coming from abroad, but actually trying to develop their own shape of faith and experience. And we're very much in that period at the moment.
And there's also a lot of education came at the same time. And I read that in the beginning, in the 19th century, there was a time when there were more literate Maori than literate Pākehā.
Yes, yes, that's certainly the case, because the response of Maori was very, very profound to Christianity in the early phase, whereas for a lot of settlers, well, I mean, for a start, they probably couldn't get to church very easily because many of them were, you know, were greatly dispersed and there was a lack of priests and ministers and so on and so forth. And then the predominant form of religion in New Zealand, quite strikingly so, was Anglicanism. And Anglicanism, which they'd known back in England and brought with them, was a minimal demand religion. You know, it was a form of Christianity which didn't expect too much of people. And I mean, in some ways, we're reaping the consequences of a low demand religious culture in New Zealand today. But that's left a very particular impact, I think probably on other churches as well, because Anglican practices very quickly become the practices of others.
And you mentioned the beginning of the 20th century. I heard that there were some Muslim communities coming in into the country. So it became, New Zealand became already more diverse and religious.
Yes, this is a very interesting story, and a story that I've tried to give a lot more attention to in recent years as we've needed to identify the ways in which new religious cultures have come. And once again, migrants actually need religion to help them to find identity in a new place. It gives them a bridge between their home societies and their new society. And so early Jewish communities, they are very early coming into New Zealand. There are Jewish communities there from the 1840s in New Zealand. There are small groups of Muslims. We have the great good fortune of having the religious census that from the very beginning in 1861, they were collecting religious data as well as all the other data that the census collects. So we've got a fantastic indication, and we know from that that there were very small numbers of Muslims being brought in, mostly by ex-Indian soldiers, Europeans, mm-hmm. who loved the loyalty of their Indian workers and brought them here, especially to Canterbury. And so there were little groups of Muslims, and they must have found it very difficult because they were not able to build their own religious place of worship. I think it's 1951 that's the first mosque in New Zealand. But the small Muslim groups, many of them become traders and itinerants, but they have a little network all of their own. And the same is true of early Hindus as well.
And now we are such a diverse country, and especially Auckland is extremely diverse regarding religions.
It is absolutely fascinating. I every now and then resume a determination to do a map of the diversity of Auckland in religious terms. And I discover in the month or two since I put the project aside, another group has appeared, or I've gained some insight into a group that I didn't even know existed, but has been there for many years. And sometimes I actually find just wandering the streets, you come across a little temple or religious building that was, you know, just pushed away into the corner, and actually it's there. Yes.
It's interesting because the Auckland Interfaith Council does a yearly Exploring Sacred Spaces event where people are invited to visit different spaces of worship. And every year most of the years, it's a different place. And then you also discover new things. You discover, oh, there is a Coptic church. There's only one Coptic church in Auckland.
Yes,
And yes. Then you come to a little Islamic center or a little chapel that people didn't know about. And I think that there's always space to learn and to get to know the neighbors. And when you know the neighbors very well, I think that you can build bridges easily.
And one of the lovely things about this is that migrants tend to come because they know other migrants. And so you get, say, for the Coptic community, them assembling in Beach Haven around their Coptic church, or for I can locate various groups in different places, the very particular places where Sikhs worship and where different strands of Buddhism find their places of worship, and they often reside around those places.
Yeah, and also I was wondering, in New Zealand, it's often said that it's a secular country, but we've just discussed about all these religions that we have here and all these places of worship popping up. And some people still think that religion is not needed, but religion is so important, as you say, for migrants, but for other people also. And the value for society is often underestimated. Where do you see the relevance and importance of religion in today's society, with a particular focus on New Zealand?
I'm very clear that a community, indeed a whole society, gets the religion that it wants. And if it chooses to push religion to the edges of society, then religions will struggle much more and lots of people will be disconnected. But for those who are connected, several things come through. Firstly, they are people who know how to bring up their children with values and with significance. They know how to care for and nurture the elderly and the people who are on the fringes of society. The very significant role that has been played in New Zealand by voluntary movements that have, you know, city missions and various educational enterprises and the like, tell us that in the history of the society, a healthy society has healthy religions. But I think what's happening in our society at the moment is that we have actually, I'd call it a deliberate policy to minimize the place of religion in the misguided belief that we will get on better in our diversity if we play down religion. And I think the profound mistakenness of that is that we're pulling away the social structures that lead to a healthy society in the process of trying to ensure that people respect each other. Actually, most religions have grown up in the midst of other religions around them, and they have had to learn how to respect one another. Of course, there are cases of religious violence, but there's plenty of secular violence as well. And I don't think we can afford to just say religion is the source of violence. The lack of religious respect is the source of violence. But what we actually need is our secular schools have for too long excluded religion from the subject matter of teaching. And I'm glad to see there are hints of change, because we desperately need that children will learn to respect each other with their different values and beliefs.
And I think it's also often religion is taken advantage of. So politics and religion, when they are mingled, and they often religion is used rather than working with religion.
Yes. Of course, let's be conscious that religions sometimes deserve some of the criticism that they get from politicians. And we live in a society where, unfortunately, a great deal of attention is being drawn to the abuse of religion. But, I mean, something is kind of crazy when all the good and value that churches and temples and mosques supply is completely set aside to draw attention to abuse. as though abuse were the only thing. And that people imagine that any type of strong religion is dangerous to a community. Well, that's ridiculous. Strong religion should lead to much greater levels of activity and benevolence and care. Now, that being said, I mean, we can't avoid, as religious people, awareness of the abuses of religion. And it does worry me that it's so easy for religious institutions to forget that the public is actually shaped by stories. And if they hear negative stories, then unfortunately they're going to become very coy about religious values. And so we've got to be careful, because we are in a very politically volatile situation, that churches and mosques and temples subject themselves to their own standards of scrupulous behavior. That's the risk I see.
Yes. And also, you mentioned earlier that there are a lot of changes with religions and numbers, etc. So some mainstream churches, for example, they're sometimes complaining about the decline of participants in their services. And some long-established churches are facing the threat of having to close down due to lack of members. At the same time, new huge churches and other places of worship are being built. So, as we said, religion we have a diversity of religion. What do you see as the future of religion here in this country, New Zealand?
It is so dynamic that I would be cautious to make any confident prophecy. And I think what we're watching is actually global trends, and particularly Western trends, but actually most of the existing religious groups are being renewed by migrants who are arriving. So that, I mean, the Catholic Church today would be in a pretty poor, parlous state if it weren't for Filipinos and for Pacific Islanders. And similarly, the Methodist Church, without the Tongan and Samoan support. And one of the problems that Anglicanism has got is that generally religion was not taken as strongly with them to their colonies as it was in the cases of some other traditions. And so while, you know, there's some groups from Africa and India appearing, it's the Anglican Church especially that's kind of restricted to its existing Pakeha and Māori supporters. But I watch with great interest when I see, say, a traditional European church taken over by a new Korean or Chinese community. And the old community actually needs to be gracious about this. And as for the long-term significance, well, of course, gradually, as these new migrant communities become more settled, the church may well become less important to many of them. But I think we're in such a dynamic situation globally that I think it would be extraordinarily unwise for people to write religion off. I don't think so.
And talking about not writing them off, what about the New Zealand general elections 2023? Do you think that religion will play a role in the light of these elections?
Well, it already has begun to play a little bit of a role on the edge with this Freedoms Party and the complexity of what happened with the dispute over the mandates during COVID. And for various reasons, some religious communities, especially smaller religious communities, have been caught up in these debates. So that's quite an interesting play. Brian Tamaki is certainly making his presence felt in his particular tradition. I also note that a lot of debates over sexuality are beginning to appear on the edges of this as well. And this is where religions do need to be aware that, and they've got to get involved in the discussions that are going on about the changing social character of New Zealand and involve themselves in a good way. I'll tell you another aspect that's very interesting is that churches and church-related voluntary groups, the Salvation Army, for example, play a very, very significant role in the care of the homeless and in the impoverished. Think of the city missions and their role in the impoverished sectors of society. And not just the named city missions, but Catholic social services and Presbyterian support and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And they are extremely dependent on a comfortable relationship with a state that understands what they are doing. And I think one of the things we as responsible people should be asking is asking our politicians, what's your attitude towards the care for the homeless? What's your attitude towards the impoverished? What is your attitude towards refugees? I think it kind of is important that our values that come from our faith really do impinge on our political preferences and decisions.
And that's really important. I'm just wondering if some of the new migrants, depending on where they're coming from, when they are allowed to vote, and they come with a baggage of maybe a system where they were not able to demand any answers to certain questions. Mm. So so you say the beauty is you come from people coming from different cultures. The challenge is then to understand the New Zealand culture and to adapt to it easily so that you're not just in the religious space, but also as a citizen.
Yes, of course. And I mean, good citizenship, I think it can be argued. A healthy religious society that is genuinely plural in its understanding of religion is actually the basis for a healthy democracy as well.
That's very well put. Thank you so much, Peter. That was really interesting. I enjoyed the little glimpse through the history of New Zealand and knowing it's not over. Religion is there, and religion has been there, I think, since human beings and just in different forms. So thank you very much. And for our next sessions on Titiponamu, Study and Joy, we are currently having a series with Brother Karen Finn, which will continue on the 4th of September. It's about women in the Bible, and we are focusing on the Hebrew Bible. The next sessions are held on the 4th, 11th, and the 18th of September, 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Zoom. For more information and any current or past programs, please check out www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you, Peter, for the interview.
Thank you.
Out there, old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawning. Songs in our